This is Audible.
Penguin Random House Audio presents The Greatest Salesman in the World. You can change your life with the priceless wisdom of 10 ancient scrolls handed down for thousands of years. By Og Mandino. Read for you by Mark Bramhall. Chapter 1. Hafid lingered before the bronze mirror and studied his reflected image in the polished metal. "Only the eyes have retained their youth," he murmured as he turned away and moved slowly across the spacious marble floor. He passed between black onyx columns rising to support ceilings burnished with silver and gold, and his aging legs carried him past tables carved from cypress and ivory. Tortoiseshell gleamed from couches and divans, and the walls, inlaid with gems, shimmered with brocades of the most painstaking design. Huge palms grew placidly in bronze vessels framing a fountain of alabaster nymphs, while flower boxes, encrusted with gems, competed with their contents for attention. No visitor to Hafid's palace could doubt that he was indeed a person of great wealth. The old man passed through an enclosed garden and entered his warehouse, which extended beyond the mansion for 500 paces. Erasmus, his chief bookkeeper, waited uncertainly just beyond the entryway. "Greetings, sire." Hafid nodded and continued on in silence. Erasmus followed, his face unable to disguise concern at the master's unusual request for a meeting in this place. Near the loading platforms, Hafid paused to watch goods being removed from baggage wagons and counted into separate stalls. There were wools, fine linens, parchment, honey, carpets and oil from Asia Minor, glass, figs, nuts and balsam from his own country, textiles and drugs from Palmyra, ginger, cinnamon and precious stones from Arabia, corn, paper, granite, alabaster and basalt from Egypt, tapestries from Babylon, paintings from Rome, and statues from Greece. The smell of balsam was heavy in the air, and Hafid's sensitive old nose detected the presence of sweet plums, apples, cheese, and ginger. Finally, he turned to Erasmus. "Old friend, how much wealth is there now accumulated in our treasury?"
Erasmus paled.
"Everything, master?"
"Everything. I have not studied the numbers recently, but I would estimate there is in excess of 7 million gold talents. And were all the goods in all my warehouses and emporiums converted into gold, how much would they bring?" "Our inventory is not yet complete for this season, sire, but I would calculate a minimum of another 3 million talents."
Hafid nodded.
"Purchase no more goods. Institute immediately whatever plans are required to sell everything that is mine, and convert all of it to gold."
The bookkeeper's mouth opened, but no sound came forth. He fell back as if struck, and when finally he could speak, the words came with effort.
"I do not understand, sire. This has been our most profitable year. Every emporium reports an increase in sales over the previous season. Even the Roman legions are now our customers. For did you not sell the procurator in Jerusalem 200 Arabian stallions within the fortnight? Forgive my boldness, for seldom have I questioned your orders, but this command I cannot comprehend."
Hafid smiled and gently grasped Erasmus' hand.
"My trusted comrade, is your memory of sufficient strength to recall the first command you received from me when you entered my employ many years ago?"
Erasmus frowned momentarily, and then his face brightened.
"I was enjoined by you to remove each year half the profit from our treasury and dispense it to the poor."
"Did you not at that time consider me a foolish man of business?"
"I had great forebodings, sire."
Hafid nodded and spread his arms toward the loading platforms. Will you now admit that your concern was without ground?
Yes, sire.
Then let me encourage you to maintain faith in this decision until I explain my plans. I am now an old man, and my needs are simple. Since my beloved Lisha has been taken from me, after so many years of happiness, it is my desire to distribute all of my wealth among the poor of this city. I shall keep only enough to complete my life without discomfort. Besides disposing of our inventory, I wish you to prepare the necessary documents which will transfer the ownership of every emporium to him who now manages each for me. I also wish you to distribute 5,000 gold talents to these managers as a reward for their years of loyalty, and so that they may restock their shelves in any manner that they desire. Erasmus began to speak, but Hafid's raised hand silenced him. Does this assignment seem unpleasant to you? The bookkeeper shook his head and attempted to smile.
No, sire, it is only that I cannot understand your reasoning. Your words are those of a man whose days are numbered.
It is your character, Erasmus, that your concern should be for me instead of yourself. Have ye no thoughts for your own future when our trade empire is disbanded?
We have been comrades together for many years. How can I now think only of myself?
Hafid embraced his old friend and replied, It is not necessary. I ask that you immediately transfer 50,000 gold talents to your name, and I beg that you remain with me until a promise I made long ago is fulfilled. When that promise is kept, I will then bequeath this palace and warehouse to you, for I will then be ready to rejoin Lisha. The old bookkeeper stared at his master, unable to comprehend the words heard.
50,000 gold talents! The palace? The warehouse? I am not deserving.
Hafid nodded. I have always counted your friendship as my greatest asset. What I now bestow on you is of little measure compared to your unending loyalty. You have mastered the art of living not for yourself alone, but for others, and this concern has stamped thee above all as a man among men. Now I urge you to hasten with the consummation of my plans. Time is the most precious commodity I possess, and the hourglass of my life is nearly filled. Erasmus turned his face to hide his tears. His voice broke as he asked,
And what of your promise yet to keep? Although we have been as brothers, never have I heard you talk of such a matter.
Hafid folded his arms and smiled. I will meet with you again when you have discharged my commands of this morning. Then I will disclose a secret which I have shared with no one, except my beloved wife, for over 30 years. Chapter 2 And so it came to pass that a heavily guarded caravan soon departed from Damascus, carrying certificates of ownership and gold for those who managed each of Hafid's trade emporiums. From Obed in Joppa to Reuel at Petra, each of the 10 managers received word of Hafid's retirement and gift in stunned silence. Eventually, after making its last stop at the emporium in Antipatris, the caravan's mission was complete. The most powerful trade empire of its time was no more. His heart, heavy with sadness, Erasmus sent word to his master that the warehouse was now empty, and the emporiums no longer bore the proud banner of Hafid. The messenger returned with a request that Erasmus meet with his master by the fountain in the peristyle immediately. Hafid studied his friend's face and asked, Is it done?
It is done.
Grieve not, kind friend, and follow me.
Only the sound of their sandals echoed in the giant chamber as Hafid led Erasmus toward the marble stairway at the rear. His steps momentarily slowed as he neared a solitary murin vase on a tall stand of citrus wood, and he watched as the sunlight changed the glass from white to purple. His old face smiled. Then the two old friends began to climb the inner steps that led to the room inside the palace dome. Erasmus took notice that the armed guard, always present at the foot of the steps, no longer was there. Finally, they reached a landing and paused, since both were without breath from the exertion of the climb. Then they continued on to a second landing, and Hafid removed a small key from his belt. He unlocked the heavy oak door and leaned against it until it creaked inwards. Erasmus hesitated until his master beckoned him inside, and then he stepped timidly into the room, to which no one had been allowed admission for over 3 decades. Gray and dusty light seeped down from turrets above, and Erasmus gripped Hafid's arm until his eyes became accustomed to the semi-darkness. With a faint smile, Hafid watched as Erasmus turned slowly in a room that was bare, except for a small cedar chest spotlighted in a shaft of sunlight in one corner.
Are you not disappointed, Erasmus?
I know not what to say, sire.
Are you not disappointed in the furnishings? Certainly the contents of this room have been a conversation piece among many. Have you not wondered or concerned yourself with the mystery of what is contained here, which I have guarded so zealously for so long?
Erasmus nodded. It is true. There has been much talk and many rumors through the years as to what our master kept hidden here in the tower.
Yes, my friend. And most of them I have heard. It has been said that barrels of diamonds were here, and gold ingots, or wild animals, or rare birds. Once a Persian rug merchant hinted that perhaps I maintained a small harem here. Lisha laughed at the thought of me with a collection of concubines. But as you can observe, there is nothing here except a small chest. Now, come forward.
The two men crouched beside the chest, and Hafid carefully proceeded to unroll the leather strapping which encircled it. He inhaled deeply of the cedar fragrance from the wood, and finally he pushed against the cover, and it quietly sprung open. Erasmus leaned forward and stared over Hafid's shoulder at the trunk's contents. He looked at Hafid and shook his head in bewilderment. There was nothing inside the trunk but scrolls. Leather scrolls. Hafid reached inside and gently removed one of the rolls. Momentarily he clasped it to his breast and closed his eyes. A quiet calmness settled over his face, brushing away the lines of age. Then he rose to his feet and pointed toward the chest.
Were this room filled to its beams with diamonds, its value could not surpass what your eyes behold in this simple wooden box. All the success, happiness, love, peace of mind, and wealth that I have enjoyed is directly traceable to what is contained in these few scrolls. My debt to them and to the wise one who entrusted them to my care can never be repaid.
Frightened by the tone in Hafid's voice, Erasmus stepped back and asked,
"Is this the secret to which you have referred? Is this chest connected in some way with the promise you have yet to keep?"
"The answer is yes to both of your questions."
Erasmus passed his hand across his perspiring forehead and looked at Hafid with disbelief.
"What is written on these scrolls that places their value beyond that of diamonds?"
"All but one of these scrolls contain a principle, a law.
or a fundamental truth written in a unique style to help the reader understand its meaning. To become a master in the art of sales, one must learn and practice the secret of each scroll. When one masters these principles, one has the power to accumulate all the wealth he desires. Erasmus stared at the old scrolls with dismay.
As wealthy even as you?
Far wealthier, if he chooses.
You have stated that all but one of these scrolls contain selling principles. What is contained on the last scroll?
The last scroll, as you call it, is the first scroll which must be read, since each is numbered to be read in a special sequence. And the first scroll contains a secret which has been given to a mere handful of wise men throughout history. The first scroll, in truth, teaches the most effective way to learn what is written on the others.
It seems to be a task that anyone can master.
It is, indeed, a simple task, provided one is willing to pay the price in time and concentration, until each principle becomes a part of one's personality, until each principle becomes a habit in living.
Erasmus reached into the chest and removed a scroll. Holding it gently between his fingers and his thumb, he shook it toward Hafid.
"Forgive me, master, but why is it that you have not shared these principles with others, especially those who have labored long in your employ? You have always shown such generosity in all other matters. How is it that all who have sold for you did not receive the opportunity to read these words of wisdom, and thus become wealthy too? At the very least, all would have been better sellers of goods with such valuable knowledge. Why have you kept these principles to yourself for all these years?"
"I had no choice. Many years ago, when these scrolls were entrusted to my care, I was made to promise, under oath, that I would share their contents with only one person. I do not yet understand the reasoning behind this strange request. However, I was commanded to apply the principles of the scrolls to my own life, until one day someone would appear who had need for the help and guidance contained in these scrolls far more than I did when I was a youth. I was told that through some sign I would recognize the individual to whom I was to pass the scrolls, even though it was possible that the individual would not know that he was seeking the scrolls. I have waited patiently, and while I waited, I applied these principles as I was given permission to do. With their knowledge, I became what many call the greatest salesman in the world, just as he who bequeathed these scrolls to me was acclaimed as the greatest salesman of his time. Now, Erasmus, perhaps you will understand at last why some of my actions through the years seemed peculiar and unworkable to you, yet they proved successful. Always were my deeds and decisions guided by these scrolls. Therefore, it was not through my wisdom that we acquired so many gold talents. I was only the instrument of fulfillment.
Do you still believe that he who is to receive these scrolls from thee will appear after all this time?
Yes.
Hafid gently replaced the scrolls and closed the chest. He spoke softly from his knees.
"Will you stay with me until that day, Erasmus?"
The bookkeeper reached through soft light until their hands clasped. He nodded once, and then withdrew from the room as if from an unspoken command from his master. Hafid replaced the leather strapping on the chest, and then stood and walked to a small turret. He stepped through it out onto the scaffold that surrounded the great dome. A wind from the east blew into the old man's face, carrying with it the smell of the lakes and the desert beyond. He smiled as he stood high above the rooftops of Damascus, and his thoughts leaped backwards through time. Chapter 3 It was winter, and the chill was bitter on the Mount of Olives. From Jerusalem, across the narrow cleft of the Kidron Valley, came the smell of smoke, incense, and burning flesh from the temple, and its foulness mixed with the turpentine odor of terebinth trees on the mountain. On an open slope, only a short descent from the village of Bethpage, slumbered the immense trade caravan of Pathros of Palmyra. The hour was late, and even the great merchant's favorite stallion had ceased munching on the low pistachio bushes and settled down against a soft hedge of laurel. Beyond the long row of silent tents, strands of thick hemp curled around four ancient olive trees. They formed a square corral enclosing shapeless forms of camels and asses huddled together to draw warmth from each other's body. Except for two guards patrolling near the baggage wagons, the only movement in the camp was the tall and moving shadow outlined against the goat's hair wall of Pathros' great tent. Inside, Pathros paced angrily back and forth, pausing occasionally to frown and shake his head at the youth kneeling timidly near the tent opening. Finally, he lowered his ailing body to the gold-woven rug and beckoned the lad to move closer.
Hafid, you have always been as my own. I am perplexed and puzzled by your strange request. Are you not content with your work?
The boy's eyes were fixed on the rug.
No, sire.
Perhaps the ever-increasing size of our caravans has made your task of tending to all our animals too great?
No, sire.
Then kindly repeat your request. Include also in thy words the reasoning behind such an unusual request.
It is my desire to become a seller of your goods instead of only your camel boy. I wish to become as Hadad, Simon, Caleb, and the others who depart from our baggage wagons, with animals barely able to crawl from the weight of your goods, and to return with gold for thee, and gold also for themselves. I desire to improve my lowly position in life. As a camel boy I am nothing. But as a salesman for you, I can acquire wealth and success.
How do you know this?
Often have I heard you say that no other trade or profession has more opportunity for one to rise from poverty to great wealth than that of salesman.
Pathros began to nod, but thought better of it, and continued to question the youth.
Dost thou believe you are capable of performing as Hadad and the other sellers?
Hafid stared intently at the old man and replied,
Many times have I overheard Caleb complain to you about misfortunes that accounted for his lack of sales, and many times have I heard you remind him that anyone could sell all the goods in your warehouse within a small passing of time, if he but applied himself to learn the principles and laws of selling. If you believe that Caleb, whom everyone calls a fool, can learn these principles, then cannot I also acquire this special knowledge?
If you should master these principles, what would be your goal in life?
Hafid hesitated, and then said, It has been repeated throughout the land that you are a great salesman. The world has never seen a trade empire such as you have built through your mastery of salesmanship. My ambition is to become even greater than you, the greatest merchant, the wealthiest man, and the greatest salesman in all the world.
Pathros leaned back and studied the young, dark face. The smell from the animals was still on his clothes, but the youth displayed little humility in his manner.
And what will you do with all this great wealth and the fearsome power that will surely accompany it?
I will do as you do. My family will be provided with the finest of worldly goods, and the rest I will share with those in need.
Pathros shook his head.
Wealth, my son, should never be your goal in life. Your words are eloquent, but they are mere words. True wealth is of the heart, not of the purse.
Hafid persisted. Art thou not wealthy, sire?
The old man smiled at Hafid's boldness.
Hafid, so far as material wealth is concerned, there is only one difference between myself and the lowliest beggar outside Herod's palace. The beggar thinks only of his next meal, and I think only of the meal that will be my last. No, my son, do not aspire for wealth, and labor not only to be rich. Strive instead for happiness, to be loved and to love, and most important, to acquire peace of mind and serenity.
Hafid continued to persist. But these things are impossible without gold. Who can live in poverty with peace of mind? How can one be happy with an empty stomach? How can one demonstrate love for one's family if he is unable to feed and clothe and house them? You yourself have said that wealth is good when it brings joy to others. Why then is my ambition to be wealthy not a good one? Poverty may be a privilege and even a way of life for the monk in the desert, for he has only himself to sustain and none but his God to please. But I consider poverty to be the mark of a lack of ability or a lack of ambition. I am not deficient in either of these qualities.
Pathros frowned.
What has caused this sudden outburst of ambition? You speak of providing for a family, yet you have no family, lest it be I who have adopted you since the pestilence removed thy mother and father.
Hafid's sun-darkened skin could not hide the sudden flush in his cheeks.
While we encamped in Hebron, before journeying here, I met the daughter of Kalneh.
Oh, now the truth emergeth. Love, not noble ideals, has changed my camel boy into a mighty soldier ready to battle the world. Kalneh is a very wealthy man. His daughter and a camel boy? Never. But his daughter and a rich, young, and handsome merchant? Ah, that is another matter. Very well, my young soldier. I will help you begin your career as a salesman.
The lad fell to his knees and grasped Pathros' robe.
Sire! Sire, how can I say the words to show my thanks?
Pathros freed himself from Hafid's grip and stepped back.
I would suggest you withhold thy thanks for the present. Whatever aid I give thee will be as a grain of sand, compared to the mountains you must move for yourself.
Hafid's joy immediately subsided as he asked, Will you not teach me the principles and laws that will transform me into a great salesman?
I will not. No more than I have made your early youth soft and easy through pampering. I have been criticized often for condemning my adopted son to the life of a camel boy, but I believed that if the right fire was burning inside, it would eventually emerge. And when it did, you would be far more a man for your years of difficult toil. Tonight, your request has made me happy, for the fire of ambition glows in your eyes, and your face shines with burning desire. This is good, and my judgment is vindicated, but you must still prove that there is more behind your words than air.
Hafid was silent, and the old man continued,
First, you must prove to me, and, more important, to yourself, that you can endure the life of a salesman, for it is not an easy lot you have chosen. Truly, Many times have you heard me say that the rewards are great if one succeeds, but the rewards are great only because so few succeed. Many succumb to despair and fail without realizing that they already possess all the tools needed to acquire great wealth. Many others face each obstacle in their path with fear and doubt and consider them as enemies, when in truth, these obstructions are friends and helpers. Obstacles are necessary for success because in selling, as in all careers of importance, victory comes only after many struggles and countless defeats. Yet each struggle, each defeat, sharpens your skills and strengths, your courage and your endurance, your ability and your confidence, and thus each obstacle is a comrade in arms, forcing you to become better or quit. Each rebuff is an opportunity to move forward, turn away from them, avoid them, and you throw away your future.
The youth nodded and made as if to speak, but the old man raised his hand and continued.
Furthermore, you are embarking on the loneliest profession in the world. Even the despised tax collectors return to their homes at sundown, and the legions of Rome have a barracks to call home. But you will witness many setting suns far from all friends and loved ones. Nothing can bring the hurt of loneliness upon a man so swiftly as to pass a strange house in the dark and witness, in the lamplight from within, a family breaking evening bread together. It is in these periods of loneliness that temptations will confront thee,
Pathros continued.
How you meet these temptations will greatly affect your career. When you are on the road with only your animal, it is a strange and often frightening sensation. Often our perspectives and our values are temporarily forgotten, and we become like children, longing for the safety and love of our own. What we find as a substitute has ended the career of many, including thousands who were considered to have great potential in the art of selling. Furthermore, there will be no one to humor you or console you when you have sold no goods. No one except those who seek to separate you from your money pouch.
I will be careful and heed thy words of warning.
Then let us begin. For the present, you will receive no more advice. You stand before me as a green fig. Until the fig is ripe, it cannot be called a fig, and until you have been exposed to knowledge and experience, you cannot be called a salesman.
How shall I begin?
In the morning, you are to report to Silvio at the baggage wagons. He will release, in your charge, one of our finest seamless robes. It is woven from the hair of a goat and will withstand even the heaviest rains, and it is dyed red from the roots of the madder plant, so that the color will always hold fast. Near the hem you will find, sewn on the inside, a small star. This is the mark of Tola, whose guild makes the finest robes in all the world. Next to the star is my mark, a circle within a square. Both these marks are known and respected throughout the land, and we have sold countless thousands of these robes. I have dealt with the Jews so long that I only know their name for such a garment as this. It is called an abaya. Take the robe and a donkey, and depart at dawn for Bethlehem, the village which our caravan passed through before arriving here. None of our sellers ever visit there. They report that it is a waste of their time because the people are so poor. Yet many years ago I sold hundreds of robes among the shepherds there. Remain in Bethlehem until you have sold the robe.
Hafid nodded, attempting in vain to conceal his excitement.
At what price shall I sell the robe, master?
I will enter a charge of 1 silver denarius against your name on my ledger. When you return, you will remit one silver denarius to me. Keep all that you receive in excess of this as your commission. So, in fact, you set the price of the robe yourself. You may visit the marketplace, which is at the south entry of town, or you may wish to consider calling on each dwelling in the town itself, of which I am certain there are over 1,000. Certainly it is conceivable that one robe can be sold there. Do you not agree?
Hafid nodded again, his mind already on the morrow. Pathros placed his hand gently on the lad's shoulder.
I will place no one in your position until you return. If you discover that your stomach is not for this profession, I will understand, and you must not consider yourself in disgrace. Never feel shame for trying and failing, for he who has never failed is he who has never tried. Upon your return, I will question you at length concerning your experiences. Then I will decide how I shall proceed with helping you to make your outlandish dreams come true.
Hafid bowed and turned to leave, but the old man was not finished.
Son, there is one precept that you must remember as you begin this new life. Keep it always in your mind, and you will overcome seemingly impossible obstacles that are certain to confront you, as they do everyone with ambition.
Hafid waited. Yes, sire?
Failure will never overtake you if your determination to succeed is strong enough.
Pathros stepped close to the youth.
Do you comprehend the full meaning of my words?
Yes, sire.
Then repeat them to me.
Failure will never overtake me if my determination to succeed is strong enough.
Chapter 4 Hafid pushed aside the half-eaten loaf of bread and considered his unhappy fate. Tomorrow would be his fourth day in Bethlehem, and the single red robe that he had carried so confidently away from the caravan was still in the pack on the back of his animal, now tethered to a stake in the cave behind the inn. He heard not the noise that surrounded him in the overcrowded dining hall as he scowled at his unfinished meal. Doubts that have assailed every seller since the beginning of time passed through his mind.
Why will the people not listen to my story? How does one command their attention? Why do they close their door before I have said 5 words? Why do they lose interest in my talk and walk away? Is everyone poor in this town? What can I say when they tell me they like the robe but cannot afford it? Why do so many tell me to return at a later date? How do others sell when I cannot? What is this fear that seizes me when I approach a closed door, and how can I overcome it? Is my price not in line with the other sellers? He shook his head in disgust at his failure. Perhaps this was not the life for him. Perhaps he should remain a camel boy and continue earning only coppers for each day's labor. As a seller of goods, he would indeed be fortunate if he returned to the caravan with any profit at all. What had Pathros called him? A young soldier? He wished momentarily that he were back with his animals. Then his thoughts turned to Lisha and her stern father, Kalne, and the doubts quickly left his mind. Tonight he would again sleep in the hills to conserve his funds, and tomorrow he would sell the robe. Furthermore, he would speak with such eloquence that the robe would bring a good price. He would begin early, just after dawn, and station himself near the town well. He would address everyone that approached, and within a short time he would be returning to the Mount of Olives with silver in his purse. He reached for the unfinished bread and began to eat while he thought of his master. Pathros would be proud of him because he had not despaired and returned as a failure. In truth, 4 days was much too long a time to consummate the sale of but one simple robe, but if he could accomplish the deed in 4 days, he knew he could learn, from Pathros, how to accomplish it in 3 days, then 2 days. In time he would become so proficient that he would sell many robes every hour. Then he would indeed be a salesman of repute. He departed from the noisy inn and headed toward the cave and his animal. The chilled air had stiffened the grass with a thin coating of frost, and each blade crackled with complaint from the pressure of his sandals. Hafid decided not to ride into the hills tonight. Instead, he would rest in the cave with his animal. Tomorrow, he knew, would be a better day, although now he understood why the others always bypassed this unprosperous village. They had said that no sales could be made here, and he had recalled their words every time someone had refused to buy his robe. Yet Pathros had sold hundreds of robes here many years ago. Perhaps times had been different then, and, after all, Pathros was a great salesman. A flickering light from the cave caused him to hasten his steps for fear that a thief was within. He rushed through the opening in the limestone, ready to overcome the criminal and recover his possessions. Instead, the tenseness immediately left his body at the sight that confronted him. A small candle, forced between a cleft in the cave wall, shone faintly on a bearded man and a young woman huddled closely together. At their feet, in a hollowed-out stone that usually held cattle fodder, slept an infant. Hafid knew little of such things, but he sensed that the baby was newborn from the child's wrinkled and crimson skin. To protect the sleeping infant from the cold, both the man's and the woman's cloaks covered all but the small head. The man nodded in Hafid's direction while the woman moved closer to the child. No one spoke. Then the woman trembled, and Hafid saw that her thin garment offered little protection against the dampness of the cave. Hafid looked again at the infant. He watched, fascinated, as the small mouth opened and closed, almost in a smile, and a strange sensation passed through him. For some unknown reason, he thought of Lisha. The woman trembled again from the cold, and her sudden movement returned Hafid from his daydreaming. After painful moments of indecision, the would-be seller of goods walked to his animal. He carefully untied the knots, opened his pack, and withdrew the robe. He unrolled it and rubbed his hands over the material. The red dye glowed in the candlelight, and he could see the mark of Pathros and the mark of Tola on its underside. The circle in the square and the star. How many times had he held this robe in his tired arms in the past 3 days? It seemed as if he knew every weave and fiber of it. This was indeed a robe of quality. With care, it would last a lifetime. Hafid closed his eyes and sighed. Then he walked swiftly toward the small family, knelt on the straw beside the infant, and gently removed first the father's tattered cloak and then the mother's from the manger. He handed each back to its owner. Both were too shocked at Hafid's boldness to react. Then Hafid opened his precious red robe and wrapped it gently around the sleeping child. Moisture from the young mother's kiss was still on Hafid's cheek as he led his animal out of the cave. Directly above him was the brightest star Hafid had ever seen. He stared up at it until his eyes filled with tears, and then he headed his animal through the path that led toward the main road back to Jerusalem and the caravan on the mountain. Chapter 5 Hafid rode slowly, his head bowed so that he no longer noticed the star spreading its path of light before him. Why had he committed such a foolish act? He knew not those people in the cave. Why had he not attempted to sell the robe to them? What would he tell Pathros and the others? They would roll on the ground with laughter when they learned he had given away a robe with which he had been charged,
and to a strange baby in a cave. He searched his mind for a tale that would deceive Pathros. Perhaps he could say that the robe had been stolen from his animal while he was in the dining hall. Would Pathros believe such a tale? After all, there were many bandits in the land, and should Pathros believe him, would he not then be condemned for carelessness? All too soon he reached the path that led through the garden of Gethsemane. He dismounted and walked wearily ahead of the mule until he arrived at the caravan. The light from above made it seem as daylight, and the confrontation he had been dreading was quickly upon him as he saw Pathros outside his tent, staring into the heavens. Hafid remained motionless, but the old man noticed him almost immediately. There was awe in the voice of Pathros as he approached the youth and asked, "Have you come directly from Bethlehem?"
"Yes, master."
"Are you not alarmed that a star should follow you?"
"I had not noticed, sire."
"Have not noticed? I have been unable to move from this spot since I first saw that star rise over Bethlehem nearly 2 hours ago. Never have I seen one with more color and brightness. Then, as I watched, it began to move in the heavens and approach our caravan. Now that it is directly overhead, you appear, and by the gods it moves no more."
Pathros approached Hafid and studied the youth's face closely as he asked,
"Did you participate in some extraordinary event while in Bethlehem?"
"No, sire."
The old man frowned, as if deep in thought.
"I have never known a night or an experience such as this."
Hafid flinched. "This night I shall never forget either, master."
"Oh, then something did indeed happen this evening. How is it that thou returnest at such a late hour?"
Hafid was silent as the old man turned and prodded at the pack on Hafid's mule.
"It is empty. Success at last. Come into my tent and tell me of your experiences. Since the gods have turned night into day, I cannot sleep, and perhaps your words will furnish some clue as to why a star should follow a camel boy."
Pathros reclined on his cot and listened with closed eyes to Hafid's long tale of endless refusals, rebuffs, and insults which had been encountered in Bethlehem. Occasionally he would nod, as when Hafid described the pottery merchant who had thrown him bodily from his shop, and he smiled when told of the Roman soldier who had flung the robe back in Hafid's face when the young seller had refused to reduce his price. Finally, Hafid, his voice hoarse and muffled, was describing all the doubts that had beset him in the inn this very evening. Pathros interrupted him.
"Hafid, as well as you can recall, relate to me every doubt that passed through your mind as you sat feeling sorry for yourself."
When Hafid had named them all to the best of his recollection, the old man asked,
"Now, what thought finally entered your mind which drove away the doubts and gave you new courage to decide to try again to sell the robe on the morrow?"
Hafid considered his reply for a moment, and then said, "I thought only of the daughter of Kalne. Even in that foul inn I knew that I could never face her again if I failed." Then Hafid's voice broke. "But I failed her anyway."
"You failed? I do not understand. The robe did not return with thee."
In a voice so low that Pathros found it necessary to lean forward in order to hear, Hafid related the incident of the cave, the infant, and the robe. As the youth spoke, Pathros glanced again and again at the open tent flap and the brightness beyond which still illuminated the campgrounds. A smile began to form on his puzzled face, and he did not notice that the lad had ceased with his story,
and was now sobbing.
Soon the sobs subsided, and there was only silence in the great tent. Hafid dared not look up at his master. He had failed and proven that he was ill-equipped to be anything more than a camel boy. He fought back the urge to leap up and run from the tent. Then he felt the great salesman's hand on his shoulder and forced himself to look into the eyes of Pathros.
"My son, this trip has not been of much profit to you."
"No, sire."
"But to me it has. The star which followed you has cured me of a blindness that I am reluctant to admit. I will explain this matter to you only after we return to Palmyra. Now I make a request of thee."
"Yes, master."
"Our sellers will begin returning to the caravan before sundown tomorrow, and their animals will need your care.